For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way toward salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave. Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kip Lanford. In the cave with me, your favorite troglodytes, Mr. Timothy O'Donnell, Mr. Mark Tuttle. Gentlemen, everywhere from the local school boards all the way up to the United States Congress, there is a debate as to how much our personal beliefs, how much our religion, our religious beliefs should influence government, government decisions, and how the society in general takes on certain questions that, you know, we need to define. What direction is the country going? What direction is our school system going? Things along those lines. How do we define that? And, you know, what are the limitations between our personal beliefs and what we owe to the community?
Wow, you're throwing out a biggie, particularly here in the United States, because, you know, the United States was founded as a religiously pluralistic society, at least by the time we got to our Constitution and Declaration of Independence. You know, the idea was that there was not going to be a state mandated
a national religion.
Right, exactly.
No, the Church of England, for example.
Right. No national religion, and there was also going to be toleration for people of various beliefs and various faiths. And so with the founding, you know, ever since then the question has been, how far does that go? You know, to what extent are we supposed to govern our lives as Americans without allowing our religious beliefs to interfere, which is, honestly, I think that's kind of impossible. I think it's impossible not to let your religious beliefs, whatever your religious beliefs may be, and even if you're an atheist, you have religious beliefs, whatever those beliefs may be, they are going to influence how you live, how you think, what decisions you make, and most importantly, how you vote.
Yeah, there's a whole contest of ideas, I think, that comes up. And that is a really good question, a great topic to explore, religion in the public square. And I think we struggle with this, especially now more than ever, because we have factors like, and we've talked about this in other shows, it's based on like Pew Research and things like that. There's a decline in people who are claiming, who are identifying as being religious or belonging to formal religious institutions. Religion also, at least Christianity in general in the United States has increasingly found disfavor in terms of being seen as being oppressive or the cause of unhappiness rather than the vehicle towards, you know, the church being the venue in which one finds family and home and happiness. It's really seen as oppressive and must be overthrown. So those are some things that are going on. So I do think, and it comes up, you know, everything seems to be politicized these days, Mark. So let's dig into it a little bit.
Right. Okay. Well, first off, I think we got to define what a religion is, because, you know, without an understanding of what a religion is, it's a little hard to figure out how far it ought to go. So, you know, I think from sort of the Protestant dominant culture here in the United States, the understanding of a religion is your own private set of beliefs. And that's really not what we as Catholics understand religion to be. We understand religion to be, I think, closer to the more, you know, sort of Latin understanding of the word, a set of practices, a set of not just beliefs, but kind of a way of life that is established, you know, to a certain extent, you know, based on our relationship with the divine.
Yes. In fact, I'll throw out a definition because I just looked it up. So here's a working definition. We might find it satisfactory or might fall short. Okay, religion, the belief in and worship of a superhuman controlling power, especially a personal god or gods.
Right.
Interesting. So there's a belief. I like the belief in worship part of that definition. There is a suggestion, God or gods. So that could be something to, I mean, I always think, when I ever hear gods, I think of like the pantheon of gods, the Greek and Roman pantheon of gods.
Right, but religion for the Greeks and Romans wasn't so much the beliefs and the worship as it was the, well, I guess you could say it was the worship, but it was the practices. It was the sacrifices.
Well, they had rituals.
The rituals, the libations, mm-hmm. the plays. You know,
the incense.
You know,
a little pinch of incense.
In a lot of ways, we owe a big chunk of our artistic culture to Greek religious rites. Greek theater was a religious rite. It was a religious festival celebrating Dionysus. Mm-hmm. And from that came the whole idea of theater, came drama. To a certain extent, you could even say philosophy has its roots there with Plato's dialogues. So religion for the Greeks and Romans was more than just worship and belief. It was, like I said, a set of practices. And in a lot of ways, it was a whole sort of way of life to a certain extent. You know, if you were a... I guess, dedicated to a temple and a set of worship, that colored your entire way of life. It wasn't just a set of worship and a set of beliefs.
Well, it's not like going to mass for an hour once a week. It certainly wasn't that. I think what you're getting, what I'm hearing you saying, at least pointing the direction of, as Americans, we are very conditioned to think in terms of a separation of church and state. And that's really a pretty unique feature of America as compared to other historical settings, whether it's in the East or the West. I mean, and it's changed over time, but remember Henry VIII, you know, sort of crowned himself, you know, head of the church in England. And what follow, and that there's a kind of tradition. There's no separation of church and state there. And then you even have, you know, there's even the Catholic Church in, say, a Germany has a very different relationship than the Catholic Church has with the U.S. government. You can go back to the era of the of Russia with the czars. Well, the czar was always understood to stand as the great defender of the Orthodox Church for the Russian people. And even going back to Romans, it was always understood that what people believed directly impacted how one was able to rule, because this is why you establish things like common rituals, common holidays, common festivals. These are things that unite us. And we have secular examples of that in the United States. Now, one I think we all really, that's coming up, we all appreciate is like a Memorial Day, Thanksgiving, 4th of July, Independence Day. These are holidays in which we engage in festivities that ought to unite us as a nation. Now, one might say, well, how much that actually ends, but those are secular examples.
Right. And of course, we do have a couple of Christian examples. You mentioned Thanksgiving. You know, Thanksgiving is really a fairly deeply Christian holiday. Obviously, we have Christmas. And, Christmas is a Christian holiday that, honestly, the country has adopted as a national holiday. So we do have Christian holidays. And, you know, the roots of America are deeply steeped in Christianity. There's no denying it. Almost all of the colonies had, I think people don't realize that we had established religions in most states,
right,
up through the first 25 to 30 years of our country.
Right.
Actually maybe even the first 50 years thinking about it. The idea of an established religion, what's in the Constitution, at least originally, was understood to just apply to the federal government, that the federal government, Congress, shall pass no law respecting an establishment of a religion.
Right.
It didn't prevent Massachusetts from establishing a religion within the state.
Well, that was kind of the point of Maryland, right? Maryland was to give a place for Catholics.
Right. Yeah. Maryland, Catholicism was the established religion of the state of Maryland long after the Constitution was ratified.
Right. I you do, if you go back, I just want our family traditions, if you, on Thanksgiving, bring up Thanksgiving, going back to Thanksgiving again, if you go and read Abraham Lincoln's proclamation of Thanksgiving as a national holiday, it's in the middle of the Civil War, and he makes explicit reference to God and our nation being under God's really kind of divine judgment. And so there are these roots. So that's suggestive of kind of where we started this conversation, Mark, which is, what is that, you know, when we think of separation of church and state, what balance ought there to be? Because we don't, on one hand, one extreme would be, I don't think any of us want an individual or group who holds to a different set of beliefs or values that are that we might find antithetical, rise to power and then foist those beliefs and practices on us. But that would be so we don't want someone, for example, who belongs to a I'll just throw one out there. I'm not in any way picking on them at all. But say they're Methodist, and all of a sudden, okay, Methodism and its practices are now enshrined in federal law, and you're required to, you know, attend Sunday services. You're attend to affirm the creed, their creed, their set of beliefs in a public way, and if you don't, you're punished. I mean, that no one wants that. But at the other hand, is it reasonable to think, Mark, that we can just simply extinguish religious belief when we approach things like governance?
Well, I think the question goes back to a deeper question, and that's really, what is the relationship, not between religion and politics, but what's the relationship between religion and ethics? So if you go back to Aristotle and you look at ethics, ethics is the precursor to politics. Politics is basically ethics written large. So just like you have ethics that is to govern your own personal life and your own personal...
Your soul.
Yeah, your soul, but your conduct, how you conduct yourself, your virtue, what virtues you exhibit. That then gets magnified into politics for an entire city, or as we would say, a country now. You know, back in Greek days, it was city states were sort of the main political unit.
Kind of like Evansville.
All right. And with that, we need to take a break. We'll be back with more taking a look at religion and belief within the public square. You're listening to The Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy.
So, the scan button brought you here. Awesome. We like company. Get to know us. And if you have to leave, come back. You're always welcome. Catholic Radio Indy.
At Catholic Radio, we love to hear from you. Call us anytime. Just recently, we found this message on our voicemail.
I'm a non-Catholic that listens to your Catholic radio station, and I just wanted to thank you guys. I listen to Catholic Answers and Al Cresta sometimes, and I think her name's Teresa Tommy. I listen to her and another show or two. I appreciate it.
Call us at 317-870-8400 and let us know what you're thinking.
I just called to say, even though I'm not a Catholic, I listen to your station.
Welcome back to The Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Timothy O'Donnell and Kent Blanford. And we are discussing today the role of religion in civic life, where our religious beliefs fit into the political world that we live in. We live in a pluralistic society. We live in a society that was sort of founded on the idea that the government was not going to establish a state religion for all of us, although we were talking about before the break that, you know, that didn't necessarily apply to each individual state at the beginning of our country. But certainly now we live in a society where the expectation is that the government is not going to come and force one set of religious doctrines on all of us.
Although sometimes that gets presented that way.
It does sometimes get presented that
over way. Over more controversial issues like abortion.
Right, exactly. So the accusation's always out there. But of course, the underlying that is the assumption that this is something that in America we just don't do. We, you know, that in America it is established that you don't establish a religion. And so, but I think to get to the meat of the question, we've got to first establish sort of what's the relationship between religion and ethics, religion and morality, because I don't think anybody would really make the claim that ethics and morality ought to be, you know, left outside the discussion of politics.
I mean, we have laws.
We have laws, and not only
which govern right and wrong.
We have standards of character that we expect not only our politicians but our citizens to live up to and uphold.
And if you don't, you get in trouble.
Exactly, and we have various ways of doing it. We have laws, but then we also have traditional mores,
I would call that the culture.
You
have cultural standards that you're expected to meet.
You're expected to wear pants and shirts to work. You know, I mean, I don't
generally.
I don't think there's a law out there that says you have to require your employees to wear shirt and pants. But yet, everywhere you're required to wear a shirt and a pant. Your shirt and pants to work. It's just sort of the way it goes.
Unless it's Baywatch.
Yeah. If you're a lifeguard, that's true. Yeah, if you're a lifeguard.
Right,
yeah,
that's why I'm not a lifeguard.
Right, exactly. My daughter's actually going to be a lifeguard for the first time this summer. So, you know, she'd probably be the first one to say, I don't have to wear a shirt and pants to work.
Right. Well, there are, so the culture really establishes, there's a lot of room in the broad canopy of culture, but culture does have certain standards of acceptable and unacceptable behavior, action, choices, attitudes that we generally share, and then there's that applies at like a national level, state level, local level. There's some variance. Like I notice here because I'm originally from Illinois, been in Indiana most of my life now, but there's a very, growing up in the Chicagoland area, there was a far more liberal use of the horn of one's automobile. Where down here, it's really got to be bad before anyone honks their horn at you. I mean,
right.
It does happen here, but up there, I mean, it was all the time. And of course, New York City has a reputation for being perhaps the most, vivacious with their
horn,
with
right?
Their horn, it's a silly little example, but just culturally here, if you start honking at people with frequency and rapidity, you're kind of seen as being rude,
right? But as far as I know, there's no religious connection between using your horn or not using your horn, right? There's not a religion out there that says
civility. It's right. A measure of civility.
Yeah, it depends on the words that are used along with the horn.
Or gestures.
Gestures, right, yeah. Yeah, that's true. Maybe there are some religious utterances that are uttered with the use of the horn often.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. That's Aquinas probably relegate that more to like cultural preferences.
Yeah.
But there are things that will run deeper.
You know, and maybe it isn't. Maybe it's a charitable act when you think about it. That, you know, you're saying a prayer for that poor soul as you're honking the horn. You know, that's
right.
But anyway, but then the question becomes: to what extent does our religion, our religious beliefs, how does that play out in morality? When you read that definition of religion in our first segment. Religion was defined as a set of beliefs and worship. And I think, you know, there's a push, I think, to relegate religion to the realm of your beliefs, your personal beliefs. And
that you keep to yourself.
That you keep to yourself. And then your chosen form of worship that you do on a Sunday morning or a Saturday, how you worship. But as far as how you conduct your life, as far as your sort of personal code of conduct, how you live your life, that needs to be, I think, more established by the norms, the rules of society at large. And since we live in a pluralistic society, we really can't have religion having much of an influence on that either.
Yeah, that's how the current thinking goes.
That's what the push is for, at least.
Yeah, that's the push. I think there's good ways in which we can understand why that push is happening. I would say though that the history of Western civilization, which is what part of our patrimony, entails though morality that is rooted in divine revelation. And it's rooted in divine revelation because it's found in the Decalogue. It's found in the Ten Commandments, and that for Jews and Christians. And then for Christians, it's found in the New Testament, especially within the teachings of Christ our Lord. He shows us that he is the way, right? The truth and the life. And so those things, that's, and everyone, when we talk about a way to be in the one living in a society, everyone that's engaged in that debate and figuring that out and implementing has ideas about it. It's a question of what's the source of their ideas.
Right. And I think we as Catholics do need to kind of step back and push back against that idea that religion is solely for Sunday Mass and then, you know, whatever prayers we might utter personally and our own personal beliefs, that's really as far as we're allowed to go with living a life as Catholics, because as Catholics, we are called to live a moral life that goes far beyond just worship and personal beliefs. You know, all sure. of that's integrated into our faith life. All of that's integrated into our relationship with Christ. And so as Catholics, we have an understanding of religion that goes far beyond just belief and worship.
Right. Well, I would say, yeah, part of our beliefs include the moral life, because Holy Mother Church is the infallible teacher on faith and morals. So we have a sure guide. And the reason why we bring our moral life to bear, not just for our own growth in virtue and holiness, but it impacts how we raise our families, how we are members of families and our communities, because it's true. I think that's the thing. It's not just wishful thinking. It's not relegated to strictly the personal sphere, because it might be up for grabs. But we know that the faith and morals as taught by Holy Mother Church, they're true, and they're true in a way that isn't just for you and me. It's true for everyone.
Right, right. And I think that's, you know, as Catholics, we believe that the teachings of the Church are eminently and superbly reasonable. You know, that we do not have irrational sets of practices. We do not have irrational sets of
right.
beliefs. They all go back to the truth. And as you said, you know, we believe that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. Well, because we believe that, we believe that there is rational justification for pretty much everything that the Church teaches. Now, we may not necessarily know that as lay people who are practicing our faith and growing in our faith. We may not necessarily understand exactly the rationale behind everything that the Church teaches, but we can.
But it's discoverable.
It's discoverable, and we can have faith that ultimately there is reason behind what we're doing.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. There's rational belief, and it goes. But it goes beyond just rational. It's supernatural, I would say. Why? Because this goes back to St. John Paul the Great's encyclical, Fides et Ratio, Faith and Reason. Faith gives reason things to ponder that it wouldn't have discovered on its own, because we know what? There's divine revelation. God exists, and God has told us things about himself that we wouldn't have otherwise discovered. So we have, for example, so the teachings of Holy Mother Church, and we have sacred scripture, and then we have the magisterium to guide us and authoritatively decide or determine what's doctrine, what's dogma. And then we also have councils that can also, when disputes arise, councils can occur to settle disputes so that we know what we should believe and what we should reject as false.
Right. And ultimately, all of Catholic belief, even our belief in the resurrection, goes back to eyewitness accounts, experience, you know, basically all of the rational things that go into how we interact with the world and how we conduct our lives. So, you know, Catholicism, above all else, is a rational religion. It's a religion based on beliefs that are rooted in experience, and they're rooted in the experience of Jesus' disciples and the life of Jesus, who was God incarnate, the came. And why this is so important when you're talking about religion in the public square is that it really does give Catholicism, I would say, a perfect position to be able to interact in a pluralistic society. Far from Catholicism, like, needing to retreat or change our society or try to make our American culture or American governance into something that it's not, Catholicism is uniquely, I think, situated for a country like America.
Well, I know we're coming up here on a break before too long. I want to get us into a concrete example. I want to use abortion. And I want to use abortion because abortion comes up all the time. There's always, legislation pending or court cases that are pending. There's always something going on with pro-life, especially here in Indiana, which is a very pro-life state. You and I are very active in the pro-life movement, to say the least. And so, and as believing Catholics, of course, we're pro-life. As our Catholic listeners and so and other people of goodwill. But let's go back to abortion, and we're going to take a break here in a second. But when we come back, what I'd like to do is in the pro-life movement often get accused of forcing our religious beliefs on other people, and that's wrong, Mark. Isn't that wrong?
Of course, that's not wrong, but...
And that's not what's really happening either.
Exactly, right.
So anyway, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, Kent, what are we going to do?
I have no idea, but it will be entertaining here on The Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy.
Boy, it sure is dark in here. I guess that's why they call it The Catholic Cave. Each Saturday at 9 and Sunday at 11 a.m., The Catholic Cavemen, Timothy O'Donnell, Mark Tuttle, and Kent Blanford, as well as lots of interesting guests, shine a Catholic light on just about everything, from ancient Greek philosophers to doctors of the church to today's movies and TV. Nothing escapes their ever-inquisitive eyes. It's a fun, informative program. If you own or manage a business, you can help keep programming like The Catholic Cave on the air by becoming an underwriter. It's not costly, and you'll be helping to keep quality Catholic programming on the air. To find out more, call Val at 317-870-8400. 317-870-8400. She can tell you all about it. Or email valerie@catholicradioindy.org.
Welcome back to The Catholic Cave. I'm still Timothy O'Donnell with Mark Tuttle.
My sympathies.
Yes, and our trusty sidekick, Kent Blanford. Okay, so we're halfway through today's program, and so let's off-air. Mark said, hey, go ahead and summarize where we've been, and I'm like, okay, where have we been? Okay, so
we've been all over the place.
And we're still going to go all over the place. We're going to keep our wandering.
Round and round the mulberry bush.
Right. Well, kind of we've been trying to get at elements or aspects of religion in the public square, religion and morality, religion and virtue, and trying to, and so I think I was trying to tee us up before this last break, Mark, around abortion, because obviously it's a issue we care deeply about, our audience cares deeply about, and it's one of those, it's an issue that, people are, we're pretty divided as a country about, and often though, Catholics are accused of foisting or forcing our religiosity on others, and that is wrong because there's a separation of church and state.
Right. And the way this gets expressed is, keep your rosaries off my ovaries.
Oh my gosh, I hate that one. Yeah. That is.
Which, but on the flip side, I bring it up because I think it does sort of encapsulate what they think and what the argument is that
right.
The belief that abortion is something that should be illegal, that it should be something that should not be tolerated in a polite society. The accusation there is that is deeply rooted in your personal religious beliefs, and therefore in a pluralistic society, you really, it's not valid for you to use your opposition to abortion to enact laws and to put that. So the question then becomes, and I think abortion is a great example of this because it hits all three. It hits religion, it hits morality, and it hits politics. Mm-hmm. And what the relationship ought to be between the three of them. Yeah, I think there's a fundamental difference in some ways between what we on the pro-life side think and what those on the pro-choice side think. Although maybe not as much of a difference as is sometimes construed there. So first off, let's look at the relationship between why we think abortion is wrong and our religious beliefs. How is it that abortion and the idea that we ought not tolerate abortion, how is that construed as something that's uniquely Catholic or uniquely Christian? I think that's kind of the first question we got to tackle.
Yeah, and I would say the first problem with that is it is a religious issue, but it's not only a religious issue. That would be the first thing I would clarify. That's the first thing I would say engaging in this conversation. So I would say it is correct that that God hates the murder of innocent human beings. He hates the murder of innocent human beings. And we know that because he's told us. And he's told us with clarity in the Ten Commandments. There's a prohibition in the Ten, thou shalt not kill, which is always understood to be thou shalt not unjustly take the life of another human being. And abortion always involves the destruction, the killing, the murder of innocent preborn babies in the womb. So that would be the religious reason not to do it.
Right. But the conclusion that killing innocent human beings unjustly is wrong isn't only based on religious beliefs.
Right, that, right, right. That's
a completely rational, and this is kind of what we were talking
about
before.
And that's part two. Right. Right.
That all of Catholic morality and all of Catholic morality goes back to the idea that God is supremely rational. And so all of what has been revealed to us is ultimately rooted in reason and is ultimately discoverable. So you don't necessarily have to be a Catholic or have to be a Christian to come to the understanding that what Catholicism teaches is eminently reasonable and eminently rational and therefore eminently true. So it's not just that Catholicism teaches that killing an innocent human being is wrong. Killing an innocent human being is wrong for very rational reasons as well.
Right. That's the second. So yeah, that would be the second step I would take. First step, because you know, the question was, well, you know, what's religion have to do with it? Well, religion has a lot to do with it because God is the author of life. And so that would be the highest reasons why would be the religious reasons. But let's say the person doesn't accept religious beliefs, doesn't accept the teachings of Holy Mother Church or reject divine revelation, that kind of stuff. And so then, you know, step two is the move you just made, which I would categorize as the making the case based on the precepts of the natural law. And the natural law is accessible to every human being by virtue of the fact that every human being has a rational soul. So we have reason. So we can work our way through using beginning with first principles, using insight, and using logic to arrive at the conclusion that or arrive at the premises that life is a good. Life is intrinsically good. Life is intrinsically valuable, and therefore ought not to be destroyed unjustly.
Right.
You don't need a. That's not a religious appeal, but that's also a very strong case.
Right. And then I think then you've got to get to the step of okay, so abortion is wrong, and I think there's a lot of people. I think the majority of people.
All you have to do is see one.
Right.
I mean, that's all you really have. I mean, I don't want to be too graphic, but all you have to do is go to YouTube and watch Dr. Was it Lovino?
Yeah.
Watch him describe what happens in one, and then if you really have a strong stomach, watch some of the video from the Center for Medical Progress, David DeLeiden's undercover videos, and watch what's happening to these tiny, precious little babies, and then tell me that that somehow ought to be protected in law. I think that would defy, and that's an experiential argument.
Right.
But it is morally repugnant and revolting and horrific to watch an abortion and the aftermath of an abortion. And then that doesn't even include the damage that's done to the mother, the institutionalization of it, the compromise that it causes to our consciences as a nation because it's coarsening us to its sheer violence and brutality, and then lost fatherhood. It contributes to men behaving badly and abandoning the women in which they impregnate and casting them off. And so I get energized about it, but I mean there's just and then of course there's all the biology and science. I mean, these are not a clump of cells.
Right. But you just took a step beyond what we were just talking about. It's one thing to see all of that and see that abortion by all reasonable standards is immoral. And I think that's where the majority of the people are. I mean, the majority of the people of the people in this country do not think that abortion is a morally good thing. I mean, I think
all the way up to including the day of birth, minutes before birth. Yeah, most don't.
I think most people see that
there are some restrictions.
Yeah, there's something morally wrong with
teenagers ought not to be free to just go get, you know, go kill their own children.
Exactly.
With the help of the state.
Exactly.
Or big entities like Planned Parenthood.
Well, even if the state or entities like Planned Parenthood weren't involved, the fact of the matter is this is something that is
right,
morally
just makes
wrong.
It worse.
But then the question is, just because something is morally wrong, should it always be made illegal? And I think that's kind of the next step. So
right.
You know, where does and I think even in that process of those things that are morally wrong, that yes, religion teaches that these things are morally wrong, but those same things, at least from the perspective of Catholicism, those same things that the church is telling us are wrong, by proper use of reason, we can reasonably see that they're wrong. Even without recourse to what the church teaches or to God, etc., proper use of reason will show that these things are wrong. To what extent then do we need to worry about making them illegal? And I think even there, to a certain extent, our religious formation and who we are as a religious people sort of informs that discussion, because we have a unique, maybe not unique, but we have a certain particular perspective on the common good as Catholics. So we kind of have an understanding of what's good for human beings that's informed by our religion, and that then informs what's good for society. And so when we discuss what ought to be illegal or legal, we can bring that to bear as well, from, you know, kind of from our religious traditions.
Yeah, that gets where the realm of some prudential judgment as to what ought to make its way from the a virtuous and moral life into criminal and civil code, because I think there's a long-standing tradition. You can find it kind of in sacred scripture. You can find parables in sacred scripture, but you can find it in Saint Augustine, City of God. There is a point at which you can over-legislate morality, and in doing so, you compromise the good at the expense of trying to eradicate all evil. And I think the quintessential example, even Aquinas brings it, I think, is prostitution. So in order to stamp out prostitution, absolutely eradicate it, in one society, you would have to erect and sustain a kind of police state. Or take pornography. Well, that might even be a better example. Think about pornography is at everyone's fingertips, literally, and it's a grave moral evil, and it causes a tremendous amount of destruction and imperil souls, destroys families and imperil souls. And there's been some mild steps, it's somewhat courageous, I would say, too. Mild steps of trying to curtail or restrain. State of Utah comes to mind. There's been some Catholic University of America, I think, recently also the students successfully lobbied to have access to pornography on campus blocked vis-a-vis the internet. And so there are some things, but to try to eradicate, my point being, trying to eradicate all pornography in American society, because it is a grave evil, would require an enormous, to have an agency to it, local, state, federal agency, would just be enormous and likely bring lots of other things we wouldn't like along with it as unintended consequences.
Right. And that brings up the like you said, the prudential nature of politics, the prudential nature of law. But underlying that, though, is a common understanding of the common good. And so I think we're coming up on a break. But when we come back, we're going to start with talking, how should our religion inform our understanding of the common good?
And we'll be back with that right after this break. You're listening to The Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy.
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor. Tell them about Catholic Radio Indy.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle, still here with Timothy O'Donnell and Kent Blanford.
Haven't left yet. I might in about 15 minutes.
Yeah. Well, we've been talking about a heavy issue. We've been talking about the role of religion in politics. Where are we allowed in our society to bring our religious views as Catholics to bear on public policy questions? You know, we brought up the case of abortion, where we as Catholics are often accused of trying to foist our religion upon others by wanting to ban abortion. And you know, our argument back is all of this is based off of reason. You know, none of what the church teaches as moral and ethical is really anything that can't be discovered by reason alone. So I think that brings us to where and how we as Catholics should bring our religion to bear on politics, because we live in a pluralistic society. Thank goodness. I'm glad we live in a pluralistic society to a good extent, where you're not going to have an established religion. You're not going to have the government going out and saying, okay, all of you people are required to go and worship on Sunday in a particular way, in a particular place, and we're going to keep tabs on you, and we're going to make sure you're there. We don't live in that kind of a state. We live in a state where...
That's starting to sound a lot like China, though.
Well, yeah. And
I mean, Xi Jinping is the
yeah,
the demigod.
But that was Elizabethan England. I mean, that was sort of the religious context that America came to be. The Puritans didn't like that. Catholics didn't like that. And so the United States was founded as a place where there was not going to be an established religion. That being said, we all have our own religious perspectives, and we do bring those to bear because those inform our understanding of morality. Those inform our understanding of what's right and wrong. And ultimately, that plays a part in politics. And so I think as Catholics, we are in somewhat of a great position that we have the ability, we have the tools, we have the magisterium, we have the thought of thousands of years of thinking about moral issues that we can bring to the public square and argue our case. And I think that's really kind of in America where religion does mix with politics is each of us from our own religious perspectives and our own understanding of what's right and wrong have a forum here in this country to argue our case and to try to get those laws enacted. And there is no prohibition on, you know, arguing for a particular law, even if it's ultimately, you know, its source is in a belief that we came to through revelation through our religion.
Right. For me, when different issues come up like abortion, anyone who's engaged in the debate, whether that's conversation or voting or someone who's drafting legislation, promoting a legislator, someone elected office, any of that kind of judges, any lawyers, any of that kind of, all of us are going to bring to that issue, are going to bring a set of beliefs, knowledge, understanding about the issue. And what we have come to see is what the truth of the matter is, and that we're going to act in accord. We're going to act in accord with that. And so for me, it's what are the question becomes then, Mark, what are the sources of one's opinion, view, perspective on an issue like abortion, and who has the most valid or trustworthy sources from which we should be drawing from? And then how do those sources, values, beliefs lead us into the truth of the matter? And then we comport, then our laws ought to reflect the truth as we've discovered them. This goes back to the importance of free speech. And so my little vignette on free speech is this. Human beings are fallen. We're born with original sin, all of us, every last one of us. The consequences of which are a darkened intellect and a weak will. And so we need things, we need to grow in what? Virtue and holiness. We need the sacraments. And then we avail ourselves of education through and formation, spiritual and moral formation. Well, in order for us, and so that takes time. And we have to acknowledge it, even appealing to someone secular like a Plato, we know that we're going to suffer mistakes, misunderstandings, a lack of knowledge, a lack of wisdom. So we have to be able to freely tell other people how we see things so that through those interactions and conversations together, we can move closer. I can be liberated from I want to relinquish the things I'm holding that are mistaken, clear up my misunderstandings, and move ever more into the truth. Well, that can't happen unless there's free speech, or that, because I'm never really telling you where I stand on anything, and therefore it's an impediment to making any type of moral or intellectual or spiritual progress. So free speech is absolutely critical. But today it seems, Mark, some speech, I'm going to make an appeal to your German heritage, verboten.
Verboten, okay.
Yeah. Verboten, forbidden.
right. Yeah, and I think we're...
And that's a huge problem.
Right. But I think in American tradition, so in the founding of America and deeply rooted in our civic culture, there is a notion of freedom of conscience that mirrors and is there within Catholic tradition, that you cannot force somebody to believe something that they don't readily believe. You can't try to force belief upon somebody. You have to argue them into it. And you're exactly right. That requires a respect for freedom of speech. You know, the antidote for when somebody speaks wrongly or says something wrong or makes an error or does something wrong is not restricting their speech, but it's more speech. It's the ability to counteract what they say with opposing arguments to be able to argue it. So I think this trend where we see of people, when they say things that are offensive to other people, being shut down, canceled, deplatformed, whatever the word is these days for trying to shut down somebody that we disagree with, that's deeply un-American. And it's also deeply against Catholicism. It's deeply anti-Catholic as well.
Right. We spend a lot of time, I think, the American Catholic setting, focused on corporal works of mercy, which, you know, are of course centered on especially helping the needy. We have a special option to help the poor. I think it's also though often to the neglect of the spiritual works of mercy, where in the spiritual works of mercy we're called to counsel and admonish. And instruct. Yeah. That's right. And so that requires courage to do that with charity. And it also requires a deep sense of humility to accept it. When I'm the one being admonished or I'm the one being corrected, that takes a lot of humility, because that often it usually stings, right? It usually stings a little, and you got to be willing to get past that. So that's why I'd like to emphasize. Sometimes I know you like to teach. I like to teach. I like to stress the importance of being a seeker of truth.
Yeah.
And that appeals to people, because you and I travel not just in Catholic circles. So that's a kind of a universal appeal that I think a lot of people can support and get behind.
But also, similar to that, I think there's a need for urging Catholics to come to a greater understanding of their own faith, to know their own faith, and to know the reasons that the Church teaches what she does, so that when it does come to questions in the public sphere where there are wrong things going on, there is evil out there, we live in a fallen world, we're going to have to confront evil, but knowing the reasons that the Church teaches what she does equips us and helps us to speak out against it, and
it fortifies us, because we have Holy Mother Church has enemies, and there are those who find themselves for a variety of different reasons. I can't read someone's mind or heart, but you know, if you're advocating for abortion, you're advocating for something that is truly evil and wicked. And we need to stand up and confront that. We ought not to tolerate abortion in our midst.
Right. And I mean, that goes for a whole slew of issues, that there are just certain practices and certain things within a polite society or a civilized society or a Christian society, however you want to phrase it, that are just not to be tolerated. On the other hand, there are legitimate issues of public debate that I do think we need to bring, you know, certain elements of our faith to bear on. And we may not always agree as Catholics even of how our principles and how our understanding of what is good for mankind necessarily fits within public policy. So there are legitimate areas of policy where even we as Catholics need to discuss. We need to talk about the common good. We need to talk about what Christ calls us to be and whom Christ calls us to serve in order to sort out some of these other policy areas.
Right. There's lots of room. Here, I'm thinking of like the, you know, Catholic social teaching. There's lots of room for prudential judgment, people of goodwill on kind of the means, on how to accomplish certain things, intermediary goals, what those things should be, how ought things to be measured. Everything involves limited resources. So how ought one, you know, employ limited resources? Those are all things that are up that can be, again, reasonable disagree and let the best ideas prevail.
Right. And it's not that those things don't have anything to do with our faith. I mean, those things intimately connect with our faith.
Well, the first would be like that we care for the poor, because you can look throughout history and that's not always the case.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that really, honestly, that is a Christian virtue to care for the poor, right? You know, the pagans did not. And so the Christians were...
Or a caste system where if you're at the bottom, you're born into the untouchables. That is seen as God's providential plan for you.
Right. So, you know, I think when we look at the role that religion plays within politics, in a lot of ways, religion and our own religion and our own Catholicism informs how we should think about just about every issue. And ultimately, we need to be checking back our own political beliefs, because we have a set of political beliefs that we receive from the culture, we receive from political parties. You know, we believe certain things because the Republicans say that or the Democrats say that, one or the other. But we need to be constantly checking that back against what the Church has revealed to us, what the Church mm-hmm. teaches, and looking into the reasons why the Church teaches those things so that we can engage in politics. And that really isn't just the Catholic way. That's really the American way. That's what this country was founded to be, was to be a place where there's an equal exchange, not just of ideas, but of religious beliefs, so that ultimately the truth could prevail.
And with that, we need to wrap up this edition of The Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford for Mark Tuttle, for Timothy O'Donnell. Until next time, be holy.
The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Replays of this program are available in podcast form at catholicradioindy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to kent@catholicradioindy.org or by calling 317-870-8400. Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at catholicradioindy.org.